The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Minnesota still up 5. Russell Wilson, 1st and 10. Back to pass. Looking left. Flush out of the pocket. Throws it into the end zone. Throws it up.
Oh,
in the other
Corlin Sutton touchdown. Goes up and Sutton. Mosses it.
Oh, my.
Oh, wow. That was a dicey throw.
Oh, baby. That's right. From one legend of Russell Wilson to another. Yes, that is me and Ahmed Fareed. Ahmed Fareed kind of sounded like a legit commenter right there. And then I jumped in and it sounded like it was some B-minus right radio telecast.
No. Sorry about that. I feel like that is the new wave of broadcaster, right? Tony Romo brought it. And
right.
You're excited. You're genuinely excited to watch this play.
100%. Always. I'm excited. And I'm excited to talk about football week 12 with Ahmed Fareed. He's wearing his favorite red pants today. As always, thank you for coming in late. We got a lot to hit today. We got a lot of good games. I mean, it really was. And I don't think anything was bigger than Philly versus the Buffalo Bills. I know we'll get to that in a second. What'd you do the other day? How'd you watch the games? You doing good? Everything good in
life?
Watch
them at home. Yeah. Red zone. Watched the Thursday games with my family before I went out for our last Big Ten Saturday night game.
Okay, so you did Thanksgiving at home. Good to hear.
Saw the family and then flew out for the Friday.
Early Friday morning.
Whoa. Day of game.
Whoa.
And got to see Michigan State lose by like 50 again.
Yes.
Like the third time.
For the tenth time this year.
It's insane. We got Michigan State so many times and they were bad in just about every one of those games. But then we finished it. I got back home. I watched the Michigan Ohio State game with my family.
Was great.
And that was awesome.
Yep. Good weekend of football. Weekend of the year this weekend.
It is great.
Family football, right? Leftovers,
did
all
you
that.
Host?
I didn't host. We went to mom and dad's house. Football game was underwhelming. Like half of my family didn't show up till like 5 o'clock. And I was like, guys, it's dark.
5?
Yeah. We're a late family on Thanksgiving, but it's become another level of late. My sister and her family, they don't get there till 5 o'clock. And then they're like, well, what about the football game? And I'm like, it's dark.
It's over.
You know, Phil didn't put up lights in our stadium in the backyard. Sorry. I don't know what to tell you.
5 o'clock.
I know.
What do you do?
We didn't eat till like 6:30. Well, you know, my dad works, right? So
that's
a
true.
Lot of the times we, especially when they do the early game, the Lions game, we wait for him to get home and then we eat. You know, this year he did the Cowboys game. We didn't wait, but we did, you know, we eat late anyways. We enjoy the games, and my family's late arriving, so that's the way it worked. But everything else, good. Loved watching the games. It was awesome Black Friday. We'll get to that. You know, all three Thanksgiving Day games. And then, of course, what we had today, certainly not lack of, you know, thrilling moments and some unbelievable finishes at the end.
So here are the categories today. We got division leaders back on track, dark horses. Give me the headlines. We'll look back at Thursday. We'll look back at Black Friday, and we'll give a quick Monday Night Football preview. But we do start with the instant classic.
Instant classic.
A category of its own. One game. This might be the game of the year so far.
Do you think it was? It could be. I mean, it's
up to this point.
As I think about it, I don't know what else would rival it, right? Right. I heard somebody else say that in the hallway a few minutes ago, and I was like, maybe it was. I can't think of anything that, you know, this many big plays, went to the finish, goes into overtime. Right?
One team takes a lead in overtime.
The way it looked on TV, it had a great look. I'm sure it's going to have a huge rating, right? The way the quarterbacks played, I think it's safe to say it's the game of the year.
That was the one thing I felt bad about. Did you do Football Night in America?
I did,
Because I didn't see it.
Oh,
this game was going basically
the whole
game of it. I was like, I don't even know if they're doing it.
No, that was one today where I don't think many people were watching our pregame show, that's for sure.
Instant classic, the Eagles beat the Bills in overtime, 37-34. And get this. Now, and you talked about this. I did watch Football Night in America, I was watching it.
You're a company guy.
You said this. You were like, they don't always play their best. And maybe up to this point this year, they haven't even played their best yet.
I don't think they have,
right. So they have trailed at halftime. In each of their last four games,
they
have won all four of those. They are now 10-1. They do not die.
No, they do not die. They match up with any team in football. It doesn't matter what style that is. Right, they're so good that I don't even – they've definitely not played their best game of the year or the best of their capabilities, but they're so good they can play – you know, Devin and McCourty and I were saying this. They could play their B-plus game and beat another team's A-plus game and still go, we're still going to beat you. It doesn't matter even though we're not playing at our best, right? They have just so many things, and I think this is symbolic of who both these teams are. Right, I mean, the Eagles, like you said, answers for everything, can rely on every position group on their team to make big plays and big moments, right? And they weather the storm when they don't have the momentum, and they never let it get too bad. And, you look at the game overall, it's just like in every big moment, like we talked about last week or whatever, when the Eagles need it, they go get it. And then, you settle for a field goal. Oh, no, they need a touchdown. They drive down and get a touchdown. They're just a special football team that way. And, I don't think at their best this year they look as good as the Ravens or the 49ers. But at their worst, it's not as bad as those teams either. Their worst is like B-minus football, right, where maybe their best football this year has been like A-minus football. And that's something that, hopefully they can hit their stride and find some A-plus football. But the clutchness, the fact that the offense isn't doing well for a period of the game and Jalen Hurts he doesn't force it. He lets the game come to him. I mean, what did he have, 50 yards passing late in the third quarter, right? And then all of a sudden, we got to start pressing on the gas pedal a little bit, start making some big plays. And, he starts to rack up some yardage and plays in that way. But a great win by Philadelphia. And honestly, Ahmed, in my heart of hearts, a little bit like last week with the Chiefs-Eagles game, it felt like the Bills were the better team on the field for the most part of the game. The first half for sure. In the big moments, for the most part, though, it seems like the Eagles always seem to win those. They don't make many mistakes that are self-inflicted or any mistakes otherwise, and they just slowly but surely there wore down the Bills with their superior talent at the end of the game.
The funny thing is, and I know you were doing the show, and I don't know how much you were able to watch the play-by-play, but at the end of regulation, there were some self-inflicted mistakes by the Eagles, like Jason Kelce twice,
right,
and they're pushing
him
back and pushing him back, and there were a couple times that the Bills had a chance, and there was the Eagles were running some strange plays, too. They had no timeouts, and they were going to have to rush their field goal team on. They seemed okay with that. There was actually a pass, a short pass. It was like a five-yard pass.
The A.J. Brown pass?
Yes, it was knocked away by, I don't know exactly who it was, Poyer, maybe. If he doesn't knock that away and just lets him catch it and tackles him in bounds right there, I don't know that they have enough time to rush that field goal team. It's certainly going to be hurried.
It's going to be dicey.
It's a 59-yard field goal,
right,
or 57 or whatever it would have been after that catch. And so it certainly would have been dicey. But, Jake Elliott got the 59-yarder. And then we saw it. I mean, this is the theme of the Bills. They're 2-6 in one-possession games this season. The Eagles are 7-1. The theme of it is you showed the play with, in overtime, a chance to win it for the Bills, Gabe Davis in the end zone. Now, Tony Romo on the broadcast.
Yeah.
He thought that Gabe Davis ran the correct route, probably.
Right,
he thought that was probably supposed to be like a corner route.
Right.
But he said that there are times when you're that wide open and they're bringing pressure that the quarterback just kind of throws it up.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one. A lot of the times with those all-out blitzes, it usually is more of just let's go straight because they're expecting something quick, short, right, where they're sitting flat-footed because they think, hey, we're blitzing. He's going to have to throw it and get it out of his hand quickly. So in a lot of offenses, they might teach you to go to the post or go to the middle of the field there, and the quarterback's just going to kind of loft it up and give you a chance there. But also, I can say that to that, corner routes are certainly a cover zero beater as well. So, and it's a weird one in this way because Gabe Davis was on the outside. I can't remember who was on the inside. And they did like a switch release, right? So I'm sure that is what also kind of convoluted the conversation. Like Allen said it was – made a comment after that sounded like they weren't on the same page. Like the whole offense, like they got to figure out the rule for that with that play against that coverage. I don't know what to think. But yeah, Gabe Davis breaks to the corner. Allen obviously doesn't throw it there, and that could have been the game, right? You know, that was one moment where you go, hey, yeah, they could have won the football game. It was there to be had, and they weren't on the same page. You know, the missed field goals they had certainly played into that. And, of course, some opportunities where their defense didn't make a play to get Jalen Hurts or the Eagles off the field. And I think that's where, you know, the Eagles, we know, they can run the ball, their defense. I worry about it, like, right? I mean, this is the second – we're seeing the Eagles' defense start to get moved on here on a consistent basis. I am a little worried about that. You know, I'm shocked with how, you know, Buffalo at times did move them up front. The plays Josh Allen made, it looked like there was no plan in containing him like we've talked about with other teams and what they did. Almost like Philadelphia just went, we're the Eagles. We'll contain them. We don't need to talk about it. We'll run them down, right? Easier said than done. But I think all in all, it felt like a game that was there to be had by the Bills. And whether it was, like we talk about, the Gabe Davis, the two field goals, the bad interception by Josh Allen that gave the Eagles the short field touchdown drive in the third quarter. You know, those are things where Josh Allen played perfect. Josh Allen is a phenomenal – I don't even know where to start.
So here's his numbers right now.
Yeah.
I mean, this is how good of a year, really, on paper, he's having. Leads the NFL with 33 total touchdowns this season.
Yeah.
He had four today. It's his fourth career game with over 300 yards passing, 75 yards rushing. That is an NFL record. Scarecrow Boat says, damn okay, Josh Allen. Yes, even in a loss, he was the entire offense
100%.
Against the evil Eagles and overcame a bunch of drops plus two missed field goals.
Definitely. Four or five drops,
in
maybe three. Right?
But now this surprised me too. Josh Allen, in his career now, in overtime, including playoffs, drops to 0-6.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, it's not
his fault. He himself.
Right. You know, it wasn't his fault against Kansas City. He did everything that day, right? And then Mahomes drove down, and he never got the ball back, right? And they changed the rule after that. You know, that's the theme here, is the Bills are allowed to win a game without Josh Allen having to do everything. I checked the rule book. Their defense is allowed to stop somebody. Somebody can make a great catch or a great play after he delivers it to them. It doesn't always have to be him doing everything. You know, and I know, you know, people think I stick up for him to a degree. It's more that I stick up for him with some of the misled haters and criticism. Like, as soon as the game is over, you look on social media, and it's Josh Allen, interceptions, Josh Allen, that's the interception. Like, everybody back the fuck off on that stupid-ass, lazy headline. Like, let me give you this right here. Josh Allen, right, they haven't had a bye week, okay? He's got two more turnovers on the year than Jalen Hurts and Tua. Two more. Okay? Two. He's played an extra game than them. The pace those two are on, it'll be tied next week. But it's not an issue for those two teams. Why? Because they're on all-star teams. So nobody cares. They still win the game. Right? I mean, Hurts throws an interception today. He fumbles the ball on an exchange. It just doesn't matter. They're good enough to overcome it. And I'm not blaming Hurts or Tua or anything like that. I'm more blaming the Bills and the fact that they are always expecting one guy to make everything happen. And if he doesn't play perfect, right, and he does make a mistake, they lose. And that's why we talk about it, because we can't figure out what the other problems are. You can if you listen to this podcast, but the other people in sports media just want to go, let's blame it on the guy that, I don't know, I was watching the game today with Devin McCourty and a bunch of other people going, all of us sitting there going, I mean, is he unbelievable? Is this the best? I mean, is he unstoppable? Is this one of the greatest players you've ever seen in your life? I mean, yes. Where everybody in football is in awe of Josh Allen, except for, like, certain fans. And I want to go, how can you watch that game today and not go, he wasn't the best player on the team, and what are they fucking – or best player on the field, and what do they think the Bills would fucking look like without him out there? I mean, who makes a play on the Bills ever? Ever? So that's what's annoying, and that's where I don't like that lazy take of, oh, it just goes to Josh Allen's turnovers.
Yeah.
You know, Mahomes is top 10 in turnovers. Lamar is top 10 in turnovers, right? You know, like we talked about, I know he's led football in turnovers the last 3 years when you add it up all together. He's also got 18 more touchdowns than everybody else in football and more touchdowns than everybody in football again this year, right? With what I would tell you is one of the more average supporting cast. So that's where I'm passionate about sticking up for him, and I think it's really wrong in that way. But that, I don't want to take anything away from the Eagles and what they did in this football game. Their clutchness, their blood pressure never rises, and Jalen Hurts' leadership, stone cold ice in his veins is so freaking impressive. And, of course, that was a huge reason why they won the football game, too.
So his first career game with three or more touchdown passes and two rushing touchdowns. So five total touchdowns. I think, Pete, we have the dots for his game-winning touchdown run, which you and Devin did a good job of breaking down at halftime. Or was that
in football night? It was a little bit of both.
Halftime, right? Yeah,
it was halftime we did it, too. Right? But this is all-out blitz.
Which it didn't necessarily look like it was going to be an all-out blitz at the snap,
right? I know. They disguise it well, right? Yeah. And that's where Buffalo's a handful on defense, because they do disguise well. They do some creative things. This is a go-to play call for Philadelphia in big moments. Earlier in this drive, they called it on, I think, one of the Jason Kelce false starts, and they were going to have it for a big run there, and they blew the whistle because he flinched or whatever, right? But, yeah, this is a great call against this defense here. One, it's all-out blitz. Everybody's flying up the field. There's nobody there to account for the quarterback. So if he can get through the first line there, or the line of scrimmage, there's not going to be anybody there. And then what they do, too, is they block the down lineman and leave the edge guy who's blitzing 25 free. Kelce goes around and kicks him out, gives Jalen Hurts a nice lane. You know, we've seen them make this call in big moments before. Jalen Hurts has got great patience and vision, finds the hole, touchdown. And that's where, you know, another thing that the Eagles just have so many things that you have to worry about. The Bills are going, one, let's try to get them behind the sticks. Two, like, you know, we got to worry about the two receivers on the outside. We got to worry about DeAndre Swift. We don't want to be overpowered there. So they're trying everything, you know, known to mankind on the defensive side of the ball to make things happen. The Bills are going to be sick about this game. They lost the game. Yeah. Like I said, for the better part of the game, it looked like they were controlling it. 500 yards of total offense. They controlled the time of possession. They had 92 plays. But as we say, for probably the seventh time this year, in the big moments, the Eagles, they win those moments more times than not. And whenever they need something big, a touchdown drive, whatever, they come through in the clutch and make it happen.
They are 6-6, the Bills are, right now. I mean, this is how hard it is to beat the Eagles, right? They're 10-1 now. A.J. Brown, the Bills held him to 5 catches and 37 yards.
Yeah.
Right? And the Eagles score 37
right.
points.
That's what, because then, Devontae Smith went off, and DeAndre Swift ran for 80 yards, right? And, you know, the defense makes a few plays, and A.J. Brown gets a touchdown or whatever else. It's just, hey, whatever it calls for that week, they make it happen. That's why they're the best team in football, like I said. Their lows aren't as low as some of those other teams we talked about. Their highs are not up there with the 49ers and the Ravens to me. But again, if those two teams had to play the Eagles, I don't know who I'd pick there, because the Eagles just find a way to win that game on a given Sunday, and that's what's special about them.
In this game, it looked like two playoff teams going against each other. To be seen if the Bills actually make the playoffs.
Yeah, we'll
or 6-6 right now.
We'll
they're out of the playoff picture right
I'm
now.
I'm worried about the Eagles a little bit with that defense. And
making
how it's
the playoffs.
Looking. Not in the playoffs. You know what I mean? But just, you know, as far as that defense and some of the yards, the way they're losing the physical battle here a little bit more.
But they just
as
have
late.
So many other ways. I mean,
I know.
I feel like
exactly
all
right.
teams have. Like the line, or the 49ers went through a 3-game losing streak, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like, it just seems like you guys mentioned, the Eagles, if
never happened.
2/3 of their team is not performing,
I mean,
the 1/3
60-yard field goal in a pouring rainstorm with wind, right? Where, you know, the Bills missed like a 30-yard field goal and like a 47-yard field goal. 60 yards, and he crushes it through, it looks like by like 5-6 yards. You know, it's just, to your point, it's everything about them that's really, really damn good.
As we move on now to the division leaders, I think this game, too,
this is a good
two
game.
Teams that look like they were playoff teams.
I agree.
We have
agree.
The Jacksonville Jaguars beating the Houston Texans in what I would have called the best game of the day if it weren't for this last game.
Right.
Matt Amendola, 58-yard field goal, hitting the crossbar with just 29 seconds remaining. Also missed a 50-yarder in the second quarter there. So Jacksonville now takes a 2-game lead in the AFC South. They are 8-3 right now. But this one was fun to watch.
It was a lot of fun
to watch. At no point was I confident that either team was going to win, but at many points during the game, I was like, man, they're making a ton of plays.
It was a great quarterback battle. Both guys, Lawrence and C.J. Stroud, were on their game. It felt like to me that the Jaguars were the better team on the football field. Right, getting stopped on 4th and 1 before the half, where they could have gone up 16-7, and they were going to get the ball to start the second half. That to me, you know me. This is not me being like a man of the moment or second guessing. I'm always a little bit more.
Yeah.
You're getting the ball. You can go up 9 right there. You can go in the halftime with the momentum. Instead, the Texans make the stop. They go into halftime with the momentum and put the pressure back on the Jags to do something good on the first drive of the second half. Lawrence throws an interception with a bad missed holding call by Petrie on Evan Engram. And C.J. Stroud and company went down and took the 14-13 lead off of that turnover. That was a big moment in the football game that certainly, you know, made it tighter. But I think all in all, a little bit like we've talked about with other games, it felt like Jacksonville controlled the game for the most part of the day, right? Not that it was perfect, but I did feel like, you know, Trevor Lawrence, the passing game, were having their way. And then with the Texans, there was a few good runs in the run game, but nothing sustainable. And then even in the pass game, Stroud threw for 304 yards, but it wasn't like it was he dropped back and people were open and boom, right? How many times today, and this is what's unbelievable about C.J. Stroud, is it looked like a day where the offense wasn't delivering, but he just bought time in the pocket, moved around, slide around, move around, spin out, slide, boom, make a throw. I mean, it seemed like in the second half of the football game, very rarely did he throw a ball on time or on rhythm. It was a little like, hey, I'm looking, nobody's open, let me buy a little more time, somebody move, let me manipulate some guys, boom, first down, whatever else. He was amazing in this football game. He was. You know, whether it was his first touchdown of the game or the touchdown pass to Nico Collins late in the football game that made it close before Jacksonville put it away. Big thing that I liked, and we hit on this last Sunday a little bit, is I did feel like Jacksonville attacked downfield more in this game in the passing attack, right?
For sure.
I remember on Sunday last week, I was like, Jacksonville, there's something missing. Like, I like their meat and potatoes of their offense, but they got to find a way to take a few shots downfield and back people off, make some explosive plays. Not every drive has to be 10 plays, 75 yards. And I felt like today was a start in that direction with finding some explosive plays with Trevor Lawrence's big right arm.
Well, and when they're doing that and when they're clicking,
they look
almost
great,
unstoppable.
Right?
Right. Because they do have the running game, and they do have Calvin Ridley, who did catch a 45-yarder, and Christian Kirk, a 57-yarder, and Farrell and Johnson both catching ones that
exactly.
were over 40 yards.
Right.
So, the Jaguars are now 8-3, their best start since 2007, first 5-0 road start. They're perfect on the road. First time they've done that since 1999. Jags, fantastic. 93 says, damn okay. Trevor Lawrence and the Jacksonville Jaguars firmly in control of the AFC South and the second best record in franchise history already. But let me go back to something you said about C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, right.
Now the first rookie in NFL history with 300 or more yards in four straight games. Next Gen Stats talked about his time to throw. You said buying time back in the pocket.
Yeah.
3.8 seconds. By a quarterback in a game this season. That is the longest time to throw by a quarterback in a game this season. 30% of his dropbacks taking over 4 seconds.
That's crazy.
So I was talking about this with Michael Robinson, former Penn State quarterback, played in the NFL.
Yeah.
He said, this is the new NFL. He's like, this is a new wave. It's like, and it's been happening, but now it's almost like for certain here.
Like, what's he saying?
You need to have quarterbacks that do this.
100%.
They get 100%. Out of the pocket.
The day of the statue pocket passing quarterback, that's over, right? If you can't move and buy time, the defenses are too good. We talk about it every week. The defensive lines are amazing. The defenses are winning the schematical, you know, war with offensive coordinators right now as far as advancement, right? And that's why scoring's down. Defenses have got offenses pegged right now. You know, I watch guys, they play 3-on-3 zones versus 3 receivers, and they got them covered everywhere which way they cut out. They know route combinations. They know how to read it. Like, some of these offenses definitely are going to have to reinvent themselves and think a little bit differently about how they want to attack. So, yeah, to that point, you got to have that guy. And think about what we're talking about with the great quarterbacks in the sport. They all do that. Whether we just talk about Jalen Hurts buying time, throwing a big pass to Zacchaeus in the back of the end zone for a touchdown, Josh Allen, Mahomes, whatever, right? It's a huge part of the game. Joe Burrow's your prototypical pocket passing quarterback, but I call him a slippery son of a bitch all the time because he fucking moves around the pocket and buys time and is more mobile than people think. It's the same thing with C.J. Stroud, right? Everybody's too enamored a little bit when it comes out of college of, did he run 4.4? Oh, then he can't run. And then what we saw during the draft process is a guy that when he needs to run for 8 yards around the corner, he can. And he can definitely buy time and move in the pocket and do that. And then he always stays in the throwing position. He was phenomenal today. Jacksonville, they can't get to the quarterback with their front four. So it looked like, you know, they tried to play coverage. It looked like people were covered downfield. And C.J. Stroud, which is rare for a rookie, just was patient. Was like, I'm going to sit here, and I'll move, and I'll wait, and I'll move, and I'll wait. And boom, I'll just use my incredible arm and accuracy, and I'll find somebody here eventually if you give me this much time. And he did that throughout the day. It was a phenomenal performance by him once again because their run game didn't work today, right? And the actual surgicalness of the offense didn't work. It was C.J. Stroud made it work today, and that's what was awesome. And then, of course, like you said, Trevor Lawrence was on his game.
Yeah.
Quick decisions, great arm. He moved around really well, and I do love the Jags. They stay patient with the run game even when it's not working, you know, just to wear on defenses a little bit and hopefully set up some big pass plays in the pass game. That's what I like from Jacksonville today, though. Attack down the field a little bit more.
Yes, yeah. And attack C.J. Stroud, make him run around. He had to do that because Josh Allen generated a career-high 12 pressures in this week, 8 against Laremy Tunsil. That was Tunsil's first game over the last 6 seasons where he allowed more than 4 pressures to a single defender.
Wow.
That was thanks to Next Gen Stats. Thanks for that. But he was awesome. And when the Jaguars are playing like that on both sides of the ball, you're like, that's a potential Super Bowl contending team.
They got talent everywhere. Like we've talked about, the 49ers game was a blip on the radar where I go, that's not the real Jacksonville Jaguars. And like I said at the moment, I think that could be kind of a wake-up call of like, wait, we have to play that hard, like that crazy against these good teams in football? And they've certainly answered the bell the last few weeks. We'll see. I always wonder about those stats we're talking about right there. Like were they pressure within like, hey, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5-step drop, the pressure was there?
Right.
Or was it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I sat here, I looked here, I baked a cake, I sat here, and now I have pressure.
That's true.
Right? That's where I don't know, because it didn't feel like it was pressure like on rhythm pressure all game long. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I'm trying to watch a lot of football, but it didn't seem like that. So I wonder about the context of that stat a little bit.
And can you get 2 pressures on a play? Can you make a guy flush the pocket
and then come back and get him again?
Yeah,
you might be able
that?
To.
He says no. He's throwing the flag on that. He says you can't do that. But good win for the Jacksonville Jaguars and a good loss for the Houston Texans. If there is such a thing.
There is such a thing.
They look good in the loss.
Right.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
The Falcons got a win. They beat the Saints 24-15. Atlanta is now tied with the Saints for the NFC South lead. This is one that's going to come down to the last game of the season, and none of the teams may win a game until then. And it will still come down to the last game of the season. Losing record could win that division once again. Atlanta, though, is 3-0. They are taking care of business against their division. 3-0 versus the NFC South for the first time since 2014. Saints just keep settling for field goals all game. That was the story for them offensively.
Agreed.
And the Falcons were able to run the ball. Bijan Robinson seemed like he was the guy that a lot of people thought he was going to be when he was drafted. What's your big headline takeaway from the Falcons taking care of business.
Yeah, I think the big headline is they got back to business, or got back to what made us all think they could win the NFC South early in the year. You know, their team is built around their offensive line. They have not dominated in the running game to the extent of all the resources, whether it's first-round picks, the money they've spent on that group, the running back, of course, and Bijan Robinson. That has not performed to the level it should as far as what their assets are allocated, right? This is one of the few games since, you know, early on in the football season where I felt like they absolutely dominated up front, you know, opened up holes for whoever was playing running back. Well, you know, and of course, a big part of that was Bijan, but Cordero looked good. Algier had his moments, right? Desmond Ridder had a few timely scrambles and design runs that were huge in the football game, because he's still shaky in the pass game. But he had some moments in the game, too, though, where I went, man, Desmond Ridder is quick, decisive decisions. I like the way it looks. They got Drake London involved. But the run game is the key for the Falcons. They have the type of defense that can be a handful for anybody. And, yeah, you might move the ball like you saw today, but they're going to keep you out of the end zone, keep field goals going. So I think the big thing today was just, you know, run game going in Atlanta, and they're tough to beat that way with their defense coupled on top of that.
Yeah, 228 total yards on the ground for the Falcons. Desmond Ridder did have a couple picks in this game. They never look great either.
No, they weren't. Bad picks,
that's
right?
That's what I'm saying.
You know,
yeah.
The Honey Badger got both of them. One of them was a back shoulder throw where Honey Badger was watching him the whole way. I want to be like, you can't throw back shoulder when he is already back shoulder and looking at you. That's not when you throw back shoulder. So that was a weird one. And I can't even remember the other one that he threw to Honey Badger either, but it wasn't good. You know, and I think that's the reason, like, to your point, why he was benched at one point, because his mistakes are a little bit like, wait, that's too egregious of a mistake for you to be our starting quarterback, and as much college football you played and all of that. But their defense played well today. Defense was a lot of bend, don't break. Derek Carr, I felt like, missed some opportunities early to where he could have thrown touchdowns on the first drive. They settled for a field goal because he threw a ball inaccurate to Rashid Shaheed. The second drive, you know, they go down and move the ball surgically all the way down the field, and he throws a pick six to Jesse Bates. That was the game-changing moment that swayed everything back into Atlanta's favor, because up to that moment, it felt like, man, the Saints are kind of controlling the game. And even after that, it felt like, wow, the Saints are still, you know, doing pretty good here. Is Atlanta going to be able to hang on? Are they going to be able to do something else on the offensive side of the ball here? And the second half, the 95-yard drive, you know, with the touchdown pass to Bijan Robinson early third quarter, yeah, or fourth quarter, excuse me, that was a big moment of sustained drive, and then you finally felt like, hey, they got control of this game now. They went up by 9 and never looked back.
Schemed up a good play, got the matchup they wanted, the linebacker, and that was
definitely
really good. Yeah,
Jesse faked the play action. He came out the backside, yeah, and like, I don't think the linebacker was expecting after the play action for him to continue up the sideline that way. Nice drawn-up play there by the Falcons offensive staff.
So what do you think right now? I mean, yeah, you got Atlanta, you got New Orleans both at 5-6. You have Tampa at 4-7. We'll get to them here in a little bit. They lost again. I mean, I don't want to be too reactionary and just base it off of what we saw today, but I mean, it seems like Atlanta is the best team in the division.
I think they are. It's just the quarterback and how important that position, yeah, is a big question mark. Yeah. I think when you take team, I'm with you 100%. He just is scary. He's scary, as we saw earlier in the year. I mean, he cost them some moments of whether it was controlling a game or winning a game altogether because of the mistakes, or just their inability to even trust him and call pass plays when the moment calls for it, because they're like, oh, gosh, can we trust him here? But I think, you know, it's a top 10-ish type defense. They got a good secondary. They got big people up front. They know how to not necessarily have great pass rushers, but they know how to dial up blitzes and be creative and cause some mismatches there. So I do like Atlanta. I picked them before the season started. I'm going to still ride with them. There's just something about, like we've talked about with New Orleans, the defense isn't as good as what it's ranked. It's feasted on the poor. Derek Carr, you know, just a little off, it seems like, all the time, and at times maybe too conservative. And their inability to get in the end zone, and then just some self-inflicted, you know, wounds by them.
Yeah.
You know, driving down late in the football game, and Taysom Hill fumbles when Jesse Bates punches it out. I mean, they were going in to score. Forget field goal. They were going to be inside the 10-yard line after that play. There's like a toughness or a grit element that I feel like misses with the New Orleans Saints. That's why I can't get behind them.
Yeah, it's
you feel me there?
Tough.
I don't know.
I think Atlanta's better. Your point about the quarterback though is
scary.
It is scary.
It's scary.
Which
the
is why
team
they're
is
both
better, but the quarterback is still a big question mark.
Which is why they're both 5-6.
That's right.
Right now, and atop that division. Let's get to the back on track section now. Teams that maybe lost last time, but now it looks like, after what we saw today, they're back on track. We'll put the Chiefs in that category, even though after the first, 10, 15 minutes of this game, it was like they're not back on track.
No.
They come back to beat the Raiders 31-17, despite being down 14-0 in the second quarter. Good news for them, it's their 10th straight win when coming off a regular season loss. So they're like, eventually we're going to come back out on top here. Didn't look like that after what Josh Jacobs ran for that long 63-yard touchdown. I was like, dang.
Yeah.
Tearing up the defense now too. And is this offense going to get back on track? They
I'm
haven't scored
you.
In the second
right.
half and
right.
four game. They got back on track. What was the biggest bright spot for you in this game where maybe the offense had to at least early on bail out the defense?
Yeah, I think it got to 14-0. And they went, to your point, like, whoa, we're not going to be able to play the game we've kind of wanted to play lately, which is defense, run the ball, and Mahomes will make a few plays here. And they kind of had to get more wide open with it. And honestly, I felt like Mahomes got in a groove because of it a little bit as well. I think the big thing is they might have found their guy at receiver. We'll see where that goes. He's been having his moments, over the last month or so where you go, ooh, this guy can be the guy.
Let's go inside the numbers, powered by AWS. You led us there. The new go-to guy for the Kansas City Chiefs could be Rashee Rice. Next Gen Stats says he set a career high in targets with 10, receptions with 8, yards with 107, and he gained 37 yards over expected. The first Chiefs wide receiver to gain over 30 in a game this season. So what that means is that once he caught the ball, Next Gen Stats like, he's going to go down.
Yeah.
And he didn't go down,
no.
So we didn't expect that. 37 yards more than they expected.
That was his big thing at college. At SMU, one of the things I loved about him was he breaks a lot of tackles. I mean, he does. He's a pretty big, powerful guy for the receiver position. And we saw today, when he opens up, he can cover some ground, like, for real. But we've been talking all year. It can't just be Travis Kelce and Pacheco in the defense. That's not going to get them to the Super Bowl if that's where they want to go. There's got to be somebody at the receiver position that steps up that makes a defense at least think about that position in some big moments. So I think that's where it's awesome for Rashee Rice. And, to the point you just made, he's, can do the system stuff, but he can catch a shallow cross and break a tackle and run up the sideline for 40 yards. And he's got enough size and body control to where he can be on the outside and it's one-on-one. And, hey, he's kind of covered, but he's a big body, and I'll, use my big body and strong hands and catch the ball there. So hopefully they got something. But it felt like a game, and this is where the Raiders are coached well. They came out pretty creative on the offensive side of the ball. They were making plays in the pass game. Aiden O'Connell looked really good. You said it. Josh Jacobs breaks a big run. You're going, damn, they're kind of running the ball in the Chiefs too. This is scary, right? What's going to happen? But, it's almost like getting down 14-0 gave Mahomes the green light to go, like, okay, I can start being aggressive now. They need me to come back so I can start being aggressive. And with the Raiders, the defensive scheme is very good, but they just don't have the Jimmies and the Joes. Once you block that Joe named Max Crosby over there, there's nobody else. You look at that. Who's going to contain Mahomes? Who's going to run him down? Who's going to cover some of these receivers after he buys 7 seconds downfield on the Raiders that we are going to go, oh, yeah, that's what we thought would happen, right? So, I think that was the impressive thing for the Chiefs. Definitely came out kind of asleep at the wheel, hangover from a game they should have won maybe on Monday night against the Eagles, right? Thinking, oh, we're going to steamroll this Raiders team. They got punched in the mouth, but they reacted, the appropriate way and bounced back in a big way.
And that was Inside the Numbers, powered by AWS. The Raiders lose for the 6th straight time versus the Chiefs, held to 21 points or fewer in 11 of the 12 games this season. So I wonder, if, as we start to think about what these teams may be in the future, and the Raiders not out of it, they're 5-7. Who knows? They could get hot. They've looked good. They've looked better.
Yeah, they're
crazy.
They're playing quality football.
Raiders every year they just got to fire their head coach, and this is like Rich Bisaccia. I was like, oh, maybe he should be the guy now. Antonio Pierce, maybe he should be the guy. Like, what do we think about this offense for the Raiders? Like, what are they going to be? Right, you got Devontae Adams there, of course, and Josh Jacobs. Like, are they sticking around for the next wave? Aiden O'Connell's probably not the guy.
I know, right?
Where are they offensively?
It's like patchwork stuff, and it's like all going to be about the regime that comes in next year and what they want to do with this football team. I mean, the way they are right now and where we are and the pay and everything like it, like, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see Devontae Adams up for trade bait next year. He's going to get to the point where he's like, I don't want to be a part of the rebuild. He's going to probably, you know, be a squeaky wheel behind the scenes a little bit, and he's a big asset to where they could help rebuild their football team. Josh Jacobs, do I envision them paying him big money? No. Is Aiden O'Connell the answer forever? No, I don't think he is either, right? So, you know, they're just making do with what they got right now. What they do got is a good running back who is playing awesome. They do have two pretty reliable receivers in Adams and Myers. O'Connell knows how to play the position, but he's not going to wow you. They got to play perfect to beat a team like the Chiefs. And, you know, the missed field goal at the end of the first half where they had a chance to go up 17-14 and put the pressure back on the Chiefs a little bit, they missed that. And he kind of felt like that took the air out of the Raiders altogether. And then the Chiefs go down to start the second half, touchdown, and he kind of felt like that was all she wrote.
The Chiefs are back. They get the win. You know what else is back?
What else?
The Steelers offense. They beat the Bengals 16-10. They outgained. Oh, this is the sad part.
Can you believe it?
The streak
is
over.
How dare they?
It took us to what? What are we, week 12 right now?
Week 12, they outgained somebody.
For the first time all season, it took a Joe Burrow injury for them to do it, too. They outgained the Cincinnati Bengals. They had 421 yards of total offense. The entire 45-game stretch with Matt Canada, they never had a 400-yard offensive game. I think it was like 58 games. You go back even more since pre-Matt Canada. And so for the first time, Tyler Wake says Steelers got 400 yards of offense for the first time in forever. What did you see that was different from their attack?
I just feel like it was aggressive. That would be the first thing I would say. And I'll try to watch this on film here before we get to our Wednesday Treasure Hunter What the Fuck Happened podcast so I can get a better feel. But I think at the baseline, that's what it would be. The one thing, Matt Canada or not, that we've seen going on an upward trajectory is their offensive line play, right? There's no doubt about that. You know, when Canada got onto the sideline, the offensive line got better. You know, now being fired, you know, it's still going on a upward pace here. So they're running the ball, open up some holes that way. But today the running of the ball felt like it was opened up because of the pass game a little bit. Because they attacked Freiermuth being, you know, being back healthy, being able to work the middle of the football field is huge for their football team. You know, not only it's just one other weapon, and of course we know they got two receivers on the outside that are a little bit scary, but, you know, the vertical passing game, the O-line blocking better in the run game, the O-line blocking better in the pass game as well. You know, that was another thing today where, you know, Pickett stood in there and he had time to hit Freiermuth down the middle for a 20-yard gain or Deontay Johnson up the sideline for a 40-something yard gain, right? So that's where it got really interesting, and we'll see if the Steelers can capitalize on this. They certainly got some players and some parts here to make, you know, some of these things happen that we're talking about. Let's see if they can get, you know, a little continuity on that side of the ball and get some creativity and you know, make this a jump-off point.
They are 7-4 right now, are the Steelers, after this 6-point win. Yeah, for the Bengals, 3 straight losses. First time they've done that in a season since 2020.
Yeah.
1-6 versus the AFC. They're 0-4 in their division right now.
Valiant effort today.
Dom Rapture says, damn okay Bengals tanking the rest of the year for better draft picks. So that's what he wants to do.
Oh, yeah. You know, I don't think they're going to tank this far into it. And especially the AFC with the, you know, 6-7 spot being kind of up for grabs, they're certainly not out of it. And, you know, how can you sell to your team we're tanking when they were, it's 7-3, they're going down to score, and your quarterback throws a stupid interception, right, to where you're going to get a maybe go up at least 10-3.
But I think that's it. You nailed it. The quarterback threw a stupid interception and probably should have thrown two more, but they ended up as receptions Jamar Chase.
Yeah, Jamar Chase tipped passes. He was very fortunate on the day. Yeah. You're right. But, I mean, no, they're not going to tank. They're not. The disappointing thing with them today is their defense. You know, they wanted to – Browning wasn't bad. He makes some plays. He looks comfortable out there. You know, he's got a nice motion throwing the football, but they can't run the freaking football at all. And their defense – you know, as we stated early on in the year, continues to let up big plays every game. And that's the thing that's a little shocking to me about the Bengals this year.
16-10, 421 yards of total offense, but still only 16 points, which was a little bit of a head-scratcher for the Steelers. But it was enough to get the victory, their 7th win of the year. We close the book on the back-on-track section here. We take a peek at Sunday Night Football. 2:45 left.
It's getting tight.
Justin Tucker just missed a field goal.
Like a chippy field goal.
Wasn't even that long.
No.
Like, it was too short.
Like one where you'd go, it's a 44-yard field goal, then missed it left in a big way. And the Chargers are hanging around and really look like they've outplayed the Ravens here in the second half of this football
game. So make a call. Right now there's, 2:45 left. People already know the answer when you make this call. Will the Chargers come back and win this game?
I'm going to say no. Oh. I'm going to say that they drive down here a little bit and make it interesting, but the Ravens defense makes a stop.
You listening know if that's right? We don't know yet.
I don't know.
I am
You're right. It's
going to
be dicey. What I do know is that the Chargers win this football game, we are going to be on the Chargers' social media, and they are going to shit all over us here at NBC. I can promise you that.
They have eyes and ears
everywhere
to those people. All right, we will keep checking that one. We might be a little distracted as we go into the dark horses category. And these are teams that were like, wait a second, hold on. Don't close the book on them. Maybe they're a playoff team, potentially.
Yeah, right.
And in fact, the first team we're going to talk about, the Indianapolis Colts, if the season were to end today, they'd be in the playoffs the AFC. They beat the Buccaneers. They are currently the 7th seed. Sammy Lambert says, damn okay. Shane Steichen for that 4th-and-1 play call. Ooh, that was awesome. Sneaky coach of the year candidate.
Yeah, well, hey, with the, injuries to Burrow, Buffalo not playing that great, right? Houston and Denver being a pain in the ass, Cleveland kind of being all over the place and having a quarterback situation. I mean, it's there to be had for the Colts. And the Colts are pretty consistent. I mean, they are. It's not like I don't think they're a great football team, but, for them to be right here in this area, it's not shocking from what I've seen from them the last few weeks. I think the big thing with the Colts and the thing I tried to say on our pregame show at Sunday Night Football is – up front, they're a handful. We've broken down Shane Steichen's awesome on the offensive side of the ball. He's one of the more creative run game designers in football. Their O-line is playing really good, right? So they're opening up holes and gashing people in the run game. And then, they're creative in their pass game. And Minshew, for the most part, manages the offense, makes a few splash sizzle plays here and there with his great instincts and escapability and everything like that. And they got something working. And I think on the other side of the ball, their D-line, it's kind of the same thing. Their D-line's a pain in the ass. They got some depth and they got some difference makers across the board. So that's where they're winning some of these football games. Felt like they kind of controlled this game against the Bucs today.
Agreed.
Right? And made some mistakes that let the Bucs hang in there. And the Bucs made some big plays to kind of get themselves back in this one and made it very interesting down the stretch.
It just seemed like the Colts could do a lot. It seems like Jonathan Taylor is close to being that guy. Again, he had 91 yards on the ground, a couple of touchdowns here. And Michael Pittman has been very, very consistent. He had 10 more catches here today. He's had at least 8 in 8 games this season. And a Colt has not done that since Marvin Harrison in 2002.
Wow.
And so he has been pretty consistent with Gardner Minshew. And I do wonder, they're 6-5 right now. What would the record be with Anthony Richardson?
I don't know
that it would be better.
No, maybe not. He's a rookie quarterback.
Right.
Still learning. There's probably some things in the drop back pass game they can do with Gardner that they wouldn't be able to do with Anthony Richardson, right? You're not going to get some of the wow plays or some of the stretch the field with his big right arm like you would with Anthony Richardson. But still, as you can see, he's more than serviceable, Minshew. It's more than just like a system guy. He makes plays for them too. Now, he'll make an occasional dumb play every now and then as well. Had one bad interception today in the football game. But we started off the podcast talking about the game of the year, right, and the Eagles, Bills. This is why we talk about the Eagles not looking quite the same. They're losing a guy that's special in Shane Steichen. And you can see he knows how to get Downs and Pittman open on a consistent basis week in and week out. That's what I like about them. And the Colts kind of got a little bit mojo going. I mean, they were up 20-10, went forward on 4th down on their own side of the field at one time, right? The Bucs and Baker made some big 4th down conversions. It was a game where it felt like the Colts controlled it and kind of let the Bucs back in it. But, the Colts, as we go here, if their defense can get a little bit better, they're going to be a player in this. They are a player. We know that. But they're a pain with the way this offensive line plays and then, of course, the way Shane Steichen calls the game overall.
Yeah, Tampa's slipping a bit right now. They have lost 6 of their last 7 games.
Yeah, the defense is, you know, lets up too many big plays. There's not one area of, like, dominance by them. And the offense is kind of like, there's no consistency to it. You feel like it's three and out. And all of a sudden it's like a 60-yard pass to Evans and a 20-yard pass to Godwin. And it's a touchdown. And then it's three and out. And then it's a screen to White for 40 and another big pass to Evans. And it's, hey, we got points again. But then it's three and out. Yeah. Right? I don't know. That's kind of how it feels like with the Bucs, in my opinion.
They're kind of wasting a resurgent year for Mike Evans. Like you mentioned there, he's got six touchdowns his last six games here. But all for naught as they fall to 4-7 on the year. Fourth down and six, last chance for Justin Herbert and the Chargers here. If they don't get this, ball game probably over, even though they do have all three of their timeouts.
They got all three of their timeouts.
The
here we go. Let's see. Oh, they're bringing pressure.
Bring the pressure. And the sack. He does give it away, but that is it.
No, and that's grounding.
That is going to be grounding. That's going to be loss of down. Ravens take over. Chargers do have all their timeouts.
Yeah.
So they will need to get a first down, but so this game's not quite over yet.
They will. It should be grounding, though. He was in the pocket. It was a great blitz by the Baltimore Ravens. And as he was getting thrown to the ground, he was in the pocket and didn't get the ball to the line of scrimmage. But I haven't seen a flag down yet. And like you said, the Ravens are going to have to get a first down here. They can't just kneel on the football. But great all-out blitz or – yeah, it was. It was all-out blitz with a guy dropping in the middle in case he threw something short over the middle. And, yeah, why is this not grounding? I still don't get it. I don't care where it didn't get to the line of scrimmage and he was not in the pocket. That should be grounding.
77 was not eligible. So, yeah, no, I agree with that. All right, we'll keep an eye on that as we move on to a streaking Denver Broncos. Another win for them. They improved to, what are they now, 6-5? Five wins in a row for them?
Right.
Holy mackerel. 29-12, they beat the Browns in a game that saw DTR leave after getting hit by Baron Browning, right?
Yeah, so I mean, got
one of the hardest hits I've seen on a quarterback this year.
One of the hardest hits I've seen on anybody this year.
That's
true. He got killed, right? And that's where he's going to have to learn. Like, you can't be in that position in the NFL with these crazy mofos running at you. Baron Browning can run. He's a good edge defender. DTR did a great job escaping, but he runs out to the right. And then as he's throwing it and he's up in the air and totally vulnerable, Browning just absolutely killed him. And he kind of felt like that was the end of the Browns' chances to maybe win the football game after he went out.
So it's the Broncos' longest win streak since the 2016 season. And they have done it with Russell Wilson playing really, really well. He's got 9 touchdowns, no picks during this winning streak. And Jason Bilyeu says, damn okay for Sean Payton and Russell Wilson. Those two were brilliant today against the Browns' defense. Play calling and audibles were on point.
Yep.
Broncos appear to be getting better every week.
They're getting better. They are. They got this game, you know, played the way they want. You don't want to get to the Browns, get down on the Browns early, and now their defense can be all crazy fucking psycho, and they can run the ball and kind of play that style. That's what the Browns want to do to you. Instead, the Broncos flipped the script on them. And, you know, the thing that was shocking to me, you know, yeah, hey, Sean Payton, we know he's always got a good game plan. He wasn't going to let the blitz of the Browns and some of the crazy aggressive stuff they do up front ruin their game. He was patient. He wasn't going to let Russell Wilson ruin the game, right, as in hold the ball or try to make magic happen or throw the ball too much against this group. So I think that's where he's smart. I was shocked that they ran the ball the way they did on the Browns' defense. That, to me, you know, I was surprised. We know the Broncos have gotten better at running the ball, and the Browns have. We've seen moments of them give up run. We talk about them in the Colts game earlier this year. You know, the 49ers had moments. They're not real big up front, and they don't have great depth. But of course, they got great talent and speed and a scheme, and they create chaos. But chaos against a team that, you know, kind of has a feel for your chaos, and they know what plays work against that. It looks like the Broncos had some really good creative run plays that, you know, helped them win the football game, and that was cool to watch.
A couple bad things for the Browns in this one. I mean, that offense, it's going to be a struggle. We have something that happened in the game. Oh,
I had Ravens as a best bet against Florio.
Oh.
And they just covered on a reverse on third down for a touchdown. to make it 20-10. So I love it.
That's the cover because the spread was 3, right?
Suck it, Florio.
Which I was surprised it was only a 3-point spread.
I think the what we had it was a 3.5, right? Actually, but yeah, I know it was surprised it was a matchup league. I think what they look at is they could block maybe the Ravens' blitzes and pressures.
Yeah.
And Herbert, they have kind of a quicker short passing game where I think they probably looked at that going, that actually might give the Ravens' defense some issues here. But yeah, Ravens didn't play their best game, but they're up 20-10 here late.
Not over yet, though. Let's put a pin in that one.
We got to put a pin on. Did we hit more on the Broncos and Browns? Do we need
anything
there?
Yes, there is something. Yeah, we got to talk about this because I said there are a couple of things that were not great for the Browns. Even though they're still 7-4, offensively, it's like, what are they going to be able to do?
Uh-huh.
Even with DTR, if he comes back, that's a concern going forward here. And also, Myles Garrett says he felt a pop in his shoulder during the game. He was wearing a sling after the game. He needed assistance putting on his shirt, and he said after the game, quote, I mean, we'll see. At the end of the day, I've played through things that should have sidelined me before, and I'm going to continue to fight and do what's best for the team and for myself, but we have high hopes for the season, what we can do, and nothing like this is going to hold us back or me back. So certainly concerning. He says maybe he can play through it, but, I mean, you don't know at this point. Without him, still a good defense,
yeah.
But with where they are offensively, it's like it doesn't seem like I don't know how they could do it.
No, that would make me think differently of them. It would. He's such a game wrecker. You know, he goes way beyond the stats. He changes the way teams play because of you have to, well, we got to get a tight end over there to block him. We got to chip the back, right? He gives their defenses advantages that don't get shown on a stat sheet. I think that's what's big. He's a great leader. We know that. Pop in the shoulder. I mean, I hope it's not a bicep tendon. You know, it could be so many things. There's a lot of things that connect into there. You know, I know I tore my bicep tendon in my right arm once, and I was like, something felt like it hit me in the shoulder. I couldn't figure out what it was. And they're like, oh, it's your bicep tendon. So, you know, we'll see where it goes. But, yeah, unfortunate injury for them. Browns defense didn't play their best game today. But I think it's more about the proper game plan and the Broncos knowing who they are. You know, that's the big thing. Russell's got just the right touch right now of makes a good throw here and there. He's probably a little conservative and careful, but he's going, so what? I'm just going to keep us in the game, not make the big mistake. And in the big moments, I'll make a big play there that'll help us win the football game. And then, of course, makes the magic throw to Troutman in the end zone to put them up 24-12, and that's what I'm talking about. You run the ball like that, your defense is playing that way, you don't need to do too much. He's efficient. He's taking care of the football. He's seeing the big picture of the game, in which I think Sean Payton's teaching him, and that's awesome to see for the Broncos.
The Broncos ran for 169 yards in the game, and I thought, that's pretty good, until I saw what the Rams ran for against the Arizona
Cardinals. Can you
Cardinals.
Believe that?
228 yards on the ground in a game where Matt Stafford threw 4 touchdown passes. I mean, this is total domination. And it was 37-14. They beat the Cardinals, and don't look now, but the Rams are currently just one game out of the playoffs.
The Rams are a pain in the ass. Their defense, we talk about it, is creative as hell. They're fast. They're aggressive. If your offense is a little too predictable, they will be all over it. And then as long as Stafford's healthy, right? And here we are. This is what, you know, maybe the last 3-4 weeks we've seen the run game kind of going on this trajectory. I certainly wasn't expecting 228 yards for
that
group.
I called that.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
You were calling that?
My
yeah,
other
look
podcast.
At you.
Yeah.
Johnny College expert and NFL expert over here. But the game started with Stafford hitting big passes, right? That's where it kind of started him at well doing that. But then second drive of the game after it was 7-7 or 8-7, I should say, Arizona, that was the drive where, yeah, the run game, Freeman kind of started it off and got it going. And it looked like the Rams never really looked back from that point on. And then it became the Kyren Williams show, him killing him in the not only the run game, but the pass game too. I mean, he had a hell of a day. But they put it on the Cardinals. It's about as good as we've seen anybody put it on the Cardinals the whole year.
Yeah. Matthew Content said to us, damn, okay, Kyren Williams had a day of explosive plays fresh off the IR. And, yeah, I'm looking at the drive chart here for the Rams. They punted on their second possession and did not punt again until their final possession when the game was already
over. He hits the big pass to Atwell in the first drive that sets up the touchdown. You know, we talk about the Cardinals made it 14-8. And then, you know, the 8-7. Then, you know, the Cardinals had a moment of going for it, you know, around midfield, right? And that's where, you know, the run game, Stafford did take over. I'm missing a point in my football game that I wanted to hit here, but I can't remember what it was. But either way, domination from the Rams up front. If they continue to do that with McVay's ability to, you know, get Kupp and Puka Nacua. And to me, oh, this is where I wanted to go. I'm sorry. It was an Atwell day because every replay I saw of the pass down the field, they were either bracketing Puka Nacua or Cooper Kupp. They were determined on not letting those guys go off in this football game, and that's where it became an Atwell game. But if they can run the ball like this, and then and we know Stafford's ability to throw the ball off a play-action pass, they're going to be a pain in the ass down the stretch.
So for the Cardinals, they're 2-10 now. It's their worst start since 1959.
Yeah.
When they played in Chicago. They were the Chicago Cardinals.
Right.
Their ninth straight home loss to the Rams, if you were wondering about that.
Yeah, the Rams got their number.
They're losing. They're losing by double digits this year for the Cardinals. It's not going to be Kyler Murray or not. They're going to have a high draft pick, is what I can say.
They got, I think, the most draft picks in the first three rounds than anybody in football. So they got that. They're certainly going to have some assets and things to play with to improve their team. This game was, by far, their worst game of the year. This is one of the few games where you're a little underwhelmed, and they just like, whoa, they got out-coached, out-physicaled, nothing really went good, and the game just totally got away from them in the third quarter, and that was all she wrote. We'll see what the Rams can do here. I'm like, it's one of those where I look at the Rams and go, man, are they really a playoff team? But you start to look towards the bottom of the NFC playoff picture, and you go, yeah, they're right in the class with those teams. There's nobody that outclasses them, or I feel like, oh, they shouldn't be in the conversation with them.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Minnesota, Seattle, Green Bay, New Orleans. Yeah, LA's every bit as good as them.
If Stafford is healthy, they're in the
mix.
They're
a pain in the ass when Stafford is healthy.
To your point, the Cardinals have the number 2 and number 17 picks currently in the 2024 draft, and many more after that.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
It is final. The game at SoFi is over. Your prediction was right.
Yes.
Spot. I never doubted it. 20-10 was the final
score. They moved
the
ball. They got stopped. That was it.
Ravens won it in this one. We were, of course, doing the podcast while the game was going on. But Chris always has one game on the game that's happening. I don't know how you do it. You're a multitasker.
Thank you.
At
well,
heart.
I try. I'm not really a multitasker in anything other than watching football. Anything else in my life, I am not a multitasker. I'm not. I'm literally the guy that's like, no, I just have to focus on this right now,
yeah,
and then I'll give that my full attention here in a few minutes. I can't multitask.
You can multitask one football thing to another football
exactly,
game.
Exactly, right. As long as it's football.
Yeah, conversation with wife and football. It's like,
wife, shut up. I can't think about football, and this is more important right now. Wife, shut up.
So I'm perusing the stat sheet right now, and that's a terrible way to see how this game went. But as I said, you were watching it as well. The Ravens almost ran for 200 yards in the game. Mitchell broke another one for 29 yards.
Yeah, he started to go off a little bit in the fourth quarter, the run game, second half. They really got it going as far as, you know, Keaton Mitchell and what he can do.
All right, so the
underwhelming, though.
Chargers were in it. Yeah, underwhelming for sure, but on the road.
Right.
you know, getting the job done.
Yeah, that's right. It's a big win. It's not easy. We know that. The Chargers did have some things about their football team that I think matched up well with the Ravens. But, you know, the Ravens, it's just, you know, I don't even know how to explain it. It's some moments of deadness tonight. And I feel like tonight my big thing was I think felt like early on in the game they were too impatient with the run. Right, I think they looked at the Chargers and went, we're going to come out here and throw the ball. Their pass defense sucks. And everything I saw from all our cameras in the background, the Chargers were playing coverage and coverage and coverage and coverage. And I kept waiting for the Ravens to run the football. And by the time they got it going, it was too much of a game by that point to sit here and say, oh, they're going to control things. But,
yeah.
You know, Chargers, you turn the ball over four times, right? You're not going to win the game. It was actually a miracle they were kind of in it to this degree.
For the Ravens, it will be interesting, right? No Mark Andrews, and so Isaiah Likely was actually their leading receiver in this game, but he only had 40 yards.
No.
And so the pass game didn't go on. He did spread it around a little bit, but the pass game wasn't as good.
Their O-line was back at full strength. They didn't pass protect as well as I would have expected them to, and they were lucky that the Chargers chargered. Right? Well, that's Keenan Allen fumbling in the middle of the field one time when they were moving the ball, and Austin Eckler had the fumble that we saw where he got stripped. You know, they got down there close, and Justin Herbert got stripped sack at like the 10-yard line late in the third quarter. Maybe it was at the early fourth, right? So, you know, even when the Chargers outplay somebody, they seem to make mistakes in big moment, and that's why, you know, I think us and nobody in the nation has a whole lot of faith in them in big moments.
Who's the best team in the AFC right now? I think we would have said Baltimore maybe a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I still tend to want to go to Baltimore because of the completeness of their football team. I do. Kansas City is right there nipping at their heels for me. I think I would say that. And if Kansas City can just get a little bit more consistency with their wide receivers, the way their defense plays and having Mahomes and them having an actual run game now, I'm still going to go with Baltimore, but I'm going to give Kansas City a close second, followed by a Jacksonville third and Miami fourth.
I would say there are three teams, Jacksonville, Kansas City, and Baltimore, that I would give a legit chance by the end of the regular season. We're saying, like, that's the best team in the AFC.
Yeah, I hear you there.
You think Jacksonville's in that conversation?
I do, yeah. I think Jacksonville is one of those teams, if they hit their stride here at the right moment, that they can make a big run in the AFC playoffs, and I would not be shocked to see them get to Super Bowl Sunday.
It is time to give me the headlines presented by Hyundai. Just write to me and everyone else. We'll give you the headlines as well. We got two games here. We'll start with the Giants. Thrilling, thrilling. For you it was. Thrilling win against the Patriots. 10-7 was the final score. We've just come out now with a new audio version of the newspaper.
That's right.
And so what we need now is some alternate headlines for the audio listeners at home with
this
newspaper.
Well, when you win a game in New York, they start spreading the news.
Bum, bum, da, da, da,
Tommy da, DeVito.
Da, 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 da,
Jalen Hyatt of the win. Eden Patriots. All right, that's all we got.
That was pretty good.
Way to go. Way to back me up. I needed that right there.
That was fun. I didn't know that was going to happen. Pete's approving of it right there.
We're spreading
the news of the Giants winning a close contest. It was close throughout. 10-7 was the final. Chad Ryland missed a 35-yard field goal with 3 seconds remaining, sparing us all overtime. No one wanted this game
nobody,
to go
into overtime. Nobody.
Even people there were like, please don't do this. Please don't make it. It was rainy, cold there a little bit. All right, so you sang. Tommy DeVito is now 2-1 on the season.
Yeah.
All the other Giant quarterbacks were 2-7.
Hey, it's serviceable.
Yeah.
You know? He can throw it. You know, he's, you know, got a little movement ability. Well, I mean, I know that doesn't sound right. He can throw. He plays quarterback.
We're talking about an NFL game here.
I know.
He can throw it. He can throw the football.
You know, they're opening up the offense, which tells you that they think he can throw it and on a consistent basis start to make some plays. I think that if you're a Giants fan, it is exciting. Jalen Hyatt was the go-to guy. You could see there's real talent and speed there. That's scary. You know, run game never got going throughout the day. Giants, as we know, I think are more talented than the New England Patriots. I do. Got more playmakers on the field. Moved the ball on the first drive of the game, and Wandale Robinson fumbles, right? And, you know, and again, when the Giants-Patriots play right now in 2023, you're like, oh, man, they made a mistake down there close to the end zone. They might not get there again for a while, right? And that's the way the game was forever. And then, You got New England driving down the field, and Mac Jones throws, I don't know, one of the dumbest interceptions we've seen of the year. Off his back, this is almost as bad as the one in Germany that got a bench for Zappi, but off his back foot, fading away over the middle, weak throw, and obviously didn't locate Bobby Okereke, who makes a big return and gives the Giants a short field. And a few plays later, you know, Tommy DeVito finds Hodgins on a little shallow cross. He stiff arms the defender and gets in the end zone. And damn, for a period of time, you just went, well, damn, 7-0 might be good enough with the way the Giants' D was playing for the day. I thought they might have get it done. But then Bailey Zappi comes in, and, you know, what I laughed about was Bailey Zappi leads them on a touchdown drive, 11-play, 60-yard drive. He throws 7 screens. I mean, literally, I think it was 7 screens, and there was like 2 good runs. And I'm sure Mac Jones is on the sideline going, where the fuck were those screens when I was in the game? Why didn't we call those when I was in the game, right? But they go down, they make it 7-7, the game was ugly. But fortunately for the Giants, the Patriots were uglier than the Giants on this day.
So this is crazy. I mean, it really is kind of a depressing game because it's for New England, they're 2-9 now. Their worst start since 1993. They're not scoring points at all. You got Mac Jones. You got poor man's Mac Jones. And I mean, it's just the whole thing is not good.
It's brutal.
Ryan Watson says to us, love the pod, guys. Have we seen the last of Mac Jones in New England? This is what we were talking about last week.
I know.
And we thought we had seen the last of him.
I don't know if I think it's... I think in totality, his end with Belichick and this regime of coaches is over, right? So if Belichick stays somehow, I don't think Mac Jones will be there, right? You know, if Mac Jones stays, it will be a new regime and some new coordinator, head coach is going to come in and go, oh, I kind of like Mac Jones. I think I can make it happen.
Is that quarterback that you saw at Alabama, I mean, is he still in there somewhere?
Yeah, he's still in there. He is. He's got one, he's in the most fucked up situation of any quarterback in football the last 2 years. I don't think we can't take that lightly, right? And then, you know, whether it's the situation and then the talent around him is nothing special. I mean, he has no receiver that can do anything, you know, above, like, the coach said to run here and I run there, right? They can't do anything. You know, the run game's okay. He does have to improve his throwing from a power standpoint. There's too many softballs and lobs thrown by Mac Jones. You know, there's too many balls where I go, ooh, he's open, and, oh, it just got knocked out of the guy's hands just as he was catching it. He's got to learn to throw the ball with a little more power and pace, right? And I think that's the adjustment he has to make. But the way they're playing, the way they're set up right now is not set up for success for Mac Jones by any stretch of the imagination. As we've talked about a million times, the reason McDaniels liked him, the reason Shanahan liked him, because they knew we can give him a million plays, a million rules, he'll do it all, he'll be like a coach on the field, he can process it, and he'll go to the right place with the ball, like a Brock Purdy, right? But he's a broken puppy right now. He is. He's got the fan base on him, he's got a coach that's not supporting him, you know, he's got... You know, a backup quarterback that he knows is not as good as him, but the fan base is yelling for him, and it's just a horrible situation. So I'm sure he's a little down in the dumps and ruined, and he's going to have somebody else rebuild him here. And I don't think it's going to be this coaching regime, that's for sure.
I mean, it does look like the Patriots will be in position to draft a quarterback next year. They currently have the number 3 pick in the draft. The Giants now have the number 6 pick, so they're going in the wrong direction. This was a tough outcome for them here today.
Yeah, and then the Patriots, whether it's the missed field goal, the Mac Jones interception, I mean, Bailey Zappi with a horrible interception that gave the Giants the go-ahead field goal to make it 10-7, and there's nothing positive to talk about with the New England football team, let alone their offense altogether. Kind of a disaster, and kind of shocking that it's really fallen to this degree this fast, I think, is really what the shocking part about the whole thing is.
They're looking at the other sideline being like, how come we can't just get a Tommy DeVito type? Is it too hard to ask to get a guy that likes chicken parm like that? Maybe that's what we got to look for our next quarterback.
I would think that, you know, Malik Cunningham is seriously in the fold this week.
So, real quick, because we've already spent too much on the New England Patriots, but describe to us who is Malik Cunningham and how he could change them here.
Well, he, you know, out of Louisville, dual threat kind of quarterback, right? I think they brought him in thinking that they were going to be able to make him a receiver or something like that, almost like the lines of Julian Edelman, right? But then they started to play him, I think, on scout team, and they started to go, oh, you know, he sees the field well, throws the ball well. Ooh, look, he can move like that. They need something to jumpstart their team and their offense. You know, some quarterback design runs, a different look, a different attack that the defense is expecting. They need those type of advantages, and maybe he can, you know, provide that for them in Malik Cunningham.
Titans have their quarterback of the future in Will Levis, although it wasn't an offensive game in this one either. 17-10, though, they do beat the Panthers. Your headline for this game is?
Fudge!
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. No.
Fuck! Is the real word.
So Joe Person, who's a beat writer for the Carolina Panthers, and many of the beat writers reported this afterwards, said that leaving the locker room, David Tepper, the owner, shook his head and yelled the word that you just said.
Yeah, fuck is the word I just yelled. Okay. I tried to be polite for the headline purposes to start here, but why?
Yeah,
the Christian's Unbuttoned podcast, and yeah. I'm unbuttoned mouth right now.
And it's your newspaper.
Mouth, right.
And Hyundai's okay with it.
That's right. So F-U-C-K, right? And, yeah, I think it's for a lot of reasons. I mean, one, the Panthers, it's nothing's easy for them right now. You know, there's just hard to look at a silver lining. I know they're a team that's kind of on the rebuild, but there's not a lot of young, super talented guys on the offensive side of the ball. There's a lot of work to be done, I think, for the situation they're in. And I think that's probably where there's a little frustration there. I don't think the Frank Reich hiring has worked out to the degree that maybe David Tepper wanted. And then, of course, the quarterback – How could he be feeling good about that? He's watching a guy in C.J. Stroud rewrite the record books and tear everybody up and is already one of the best quarterbacks in football, and he's watching his quarterback go, damn, it takes us 15 plays just to get to midfield on most drives. I mean, it's 3-yard throw here, 1-yard run here, 3-yard throw there. So that's frustrating. You know, and I think that's where it is. Their defense is good, as we've talked about, but there's too much pressure on them. And, you know, really the game, what, it was a 10-minute drive to start the game by the Tennessee Titans. Really well thought out runs, short passes, whatever else. They dominate there. You know, the Panthers go down and get a field goal, okay? But then you got Bryce Young gets strip sacked from behind by Arden Key. The Titans get the touchdown a few plays later with the Derrick Henry run, and they're up 14-3, and that's all the points they need. I mean, the Panthers have to live in a area of 13-10, 16-13, and to be down 17-13 at one point in the football game, it's too much for their offense to overcome.
Yeah, we've seen Derrick Henry do this before, 2 touchdowns, his 23rd career multi-touchdown game, but it was the first time he's done that this season. This is the time of year where he normally
starts
heats up and
wear out,
the ball.
Wear on people.
Now they're a little too far behind at 4-7. Now they improved too, but they are perfect at home. They continue that streak. They're 4-0 in Tennessee this season. But the question that every Panthers fan will ask this week, next week, and the week after that, Baseball Daniel 1 says, are Frank Reich and the GM Fitterer failing Bryce Young, or is he just not very good? I feel like we answer a version of this question
every
week.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little of all of it. I think he's still, you know, learning his way. I think with their offense and the talent they have, like, there's only so much Frank Reich can do game plan-wise to make it happen.
So the fear is the game that we just talked about in Mac Jones. You say that guy from Alabama is still in there somewhere, but he's been surrounded by a bad situation. I mean, that's the fear that's what's currently happening to Bryce
Young. Yeah, and, you know, I think it's too early to draw those total judgments. One thing I feel fairly confident in saying is he's never going to be C.J. Stroud. You know, I felt like I was trying to tell everybody that in the pre-draft processes. I had C.J. Stroud in tier one by himself because I saw a guy that I thought was like on another level throwing the ball in the pocket. That's where the NFL game is, right? It really is. And then like you talked about earlier, you got to make some plays to get out of the pocket, buy some times, and make some big plays with your arm. He doesn't have a big arm that way. He's not as fast and athletic as everybody thought he was. See, the game was so open at Alabama. So that they have to get better talent around him and play a formula of football that fits Bryce Young. And I think ultimately what it's going to be is spread the field, let him make quick decisions, a little bit of Tua-ish like that way, right? And, you know, let it go from there. But right now they don't have the weapons like we talk about that can even remotely scare anybody. And offense is a struggle and just couldn't overcome or do anything other than the one drive, which was, you know, again, hard work, short passes, check down to Hubbard who made a big play after catching the ball. You know, it just it's hard for the Panthers to accumulate a lot of offense. And good job with the Titans getting the win. And I think the good thing for them is, you know, got off to an early lead. And Levis made some plays. And the big thing, too, like we talk about a lot of times, understood the game and didn't take any chances or do anything stupid. Realized it was a defensive field position game. And played it the right way, and they got the victory.
That probably was tough, too. Like you mentioned, seeing C.J. Stroud doing what he's doing, and then also seeing the guy playing against you and be like, oh, we could have just drafted him in the second round and not gave up our entire team.
Just keep grinding, Bryce Young. You still got a chance to get the last laugh. That's all that's important. It's still early.
That was Give Me the Headlines presented by Hyundai. Not early in the podcast. We're near the end here, so we're just going to do headline thoughts. We'll give you 35 seconds for each of these games.
Okay, 35, huh? Start the timer.
Thanksgiving and Black Friday, big takeaway from each game. Now, PFT Ghost is chiming in on the first one here, Packers-Lions. That's why we're only giving you 35 seconds. We don't need to hear about these games. Packers won, as we all know at this point. PFT Ghost says, damn okay, Rashawn Gary almost single-handedly ruining Ahmed's Thanksgiving. That did. It really did.
He single-handedly did ruin it. Let's be real about it. Well, the Packers, we started off the year trying to tell people they got talent on the defensive side of the ball. Here is of late, they're starting to show up a little bit. We'll see. Rashawn Gary is a hell of a football player. Right? There's a reason they just paid him all that money, even though he was coming off a pretty serious injury. They got something going. They're dangerous on the offense. Jordan Love is certainly settling in, right?
He looks good.
He makes some throws every now and then. You just go, wow, that was fucking cool looking right there, right?
Like he has like total confidence in his arm that he can be accurate while throwing it off balance or sidearm.
I almost feel like he feels more comfortable and feels like he can control the ball that way better. So it's like, let me just drop it down sidearm. It's a common thing with quarterbacks at times. You just feel like, hey, it slots there. I can feel it a little bit better instead of just being on top of the right position or letting it rip, right? You know, got a great release. Their defense made plays. They got some dangerous people at receiver. I think that's the big thing you're starting to see is the offense open up a little bit that way, you know, with that pass rush. And then your Lions, Jared Goff, the one thing, for as good as he is and everything he does, it is amazing that when he gets pressure, he becomes, you know, below average. He is a little bit like you were talking about with Michael Robinson, is a guy that can't do some of those things that you talked about. He's not going to buy time or get out of the pocket very often or move around in the pocket and then throw some laser around the field. But, hey, when he's got time in the pocket, he'll dice you up and make aggressive decisions and put the ball where it needs to go. But it's not going to be backyard football. Your team, there's two things that worry me going forward. We know one of them's the secondary, right? As we saw, that's a problem in the football game. It's a problem. You guys can't match up against guys like Christian Watson because he'll run by you. And then you play zones and you play a good team that's got a good coach and a quarterback a little bit. They know how to pick apart zones, right? So that worries me about you. The other part that worries me and what I saw from a lot of replays is the Packers had no fear of your receivers. I think that's the other thing we're going to continue to see here when you guys play quality football teams. They're going to go, Lions have a lot of good things on offense, but the one thing they don't have, other than Jamison Williams, who's not a mainstay of their offense yet, they don't have guys that can run away from good man-to-man defenders. Amon-Ra St. Brown's a great intermediate short, you know, run a fake shallow cross, come out, run the slant, return, run a double move here or there, but not the guy you could put outside and go, we'll just be outside and run by people all day, right? Or moss people or do all that. So that is two things to me that are going to be worth evaluating down the stretch with the Lions, just as far as how awesome or how up in the upper echelons they really are.
And the Green Bay Packers did not even have Jair Alexander
in
this game,
too. That was surprising.
But the Lions had no chance because of the phase of the moon, and Jay Kuda pointed that out before the game. He goes, I have bad news for the Lions. Since the AFL-NFL merger, they are 0-12 on Thanksgiving when the moon is in a waxing gibbous phase. And tomorrow is waxing gibbous. I looked up at the moon as if you're watching on Peacock or YouTube.
Don't mess with the waxing gibbous. I mean, that will fuck you up every time. I hear you, Jay Kuda. Yeah. That's next level shit. That's the kind of analytics I like right there. The waxing gibbous will fuck you up.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah, don't mess with it. You don't want to mess with it.
It makes no sense. You're lions. You're cats. You're supposed to be night animals.
No. That's but honestly, the NFL should not play games during waxing gibbous. It's just not
waxing
safe.
Waxing gibbous.
Not
don't play then. Okay. In all due, like, seriousness here.
Yeah.
It was 14-6, and I was going, Lions are going to go down the field and score here. And that was when the strip sack fumble touchdown happened. I went, oh, no. Like, now it's going to be, like, serious football game here. Like, they're going to have to scratch and claw to come back, right? And even at 23-14, I thought, yeah, they're going to be okay. They're still going to make a game of this. But then, of course, it was another strip sack fumble, right? Or a Jared Goff fumble, I believe, led to the short field touchdown of Christian Watson, making it 29-14. And I think that was the moment where I was like, okay, I think the Lions are in deep shit.
I blocked it out. Yeah. We talked about this game too much. The Cowboys continue to do what they do against teams that maybe deserve to be blown out. They blow them out. They ran away late against the Commanders, 45-10.
Oh, it was the fake punt that gave them that short field. Oh, that was a bad call right there. I just wanted to make you relive that one more time.
That was one where you can't win
the game here, but you can lose it, and they lost the game right there.
Yeah, I would have liked it. That's one of the rare times where I would have liked them to punt because I felt like if they punt, get a hold, then Packers start to clam up a little bit.
Right.
Let's not talk about
that. You want to talk about the Cowboys now?
Briefly. You got 34 seconds because we took a second too long with the Lions and Packers. But, yeah, what'd you make of the Cowboys blowing up?
Well, the Cowboys are so dangerous. And when the Cowboys start to roll, it's like they can roll as good as anybody in the game. You know, honestly, I thought, wow, this game, you know, little dangerous with the way it was going, 14-10. That drive before the end of the half I felt like was everything, right? We had the tip pass ball in the air that was caught and all of that. But to go in 20-10, that to me felt like the moment where the dam kind of broke for the Washington football team. And they can never really get anything going on the offensive side of the ball from that moment on. And I didn't think it was like Dallas hitting on all cylinders type of day on the offensive side of the ball. I kind of felt like it was just like, hey, we're better. We're just going to keep cracking at it, and you guys will fall apart as the game goes on. And that's kind of what happened with the Commanders. It just, you know, it's everything is working against them, and Dallas has got something that they're playing for big picture-wise.
It's a tough season for the Cowboys because it all really comes down to the playoffs.
Yeah. Right. They're super talented. It's going to be, can they beat the Eagles? Can they beat the 49ers? And if they don't, we're all going to go, damn, they're chokers, right?
Yeah.
It really is. But they're definitely one of the better teams in football and one of the all-time momentum teams that I can ever remember that once they get it going, you can't stop them.
Still my Super Bowl team. That was my team from the beginning of the year.
You're not crazy there.
They're in there. They're in the mix. They're in the conversation. 49ers beat the Seahawks 31-13. Just when we thought maybe the Seahawks could maybe make a play for the NFC West, at least not in this game.
No.
Geno was hurt. They came in, elbow. I mean, they just looked out of sync. But I don't know that it mattered because the 49ers did look that dominant.
Ass whooping. I mean, did that not look like a team on another level in the football game altogether? Right? I just, you know, what wasn't to like? So that's where, again, I don't mean to disrespect the Eagles, but I've yet to see them have a half or something that where it looked like the 49ers did in that first half of the football game where it was like, we can do whatever we want. Run up the middle for 10. Oh, Ayuk for 20. Debo for 15. Kettle for 20. Doesn't really matter. Pick your poison. We're going to tear you up. And of course, Seattle continues to show inconsistency and no real elite domination on the offensive side of the ball. It's just a collection of plays, and their defense is good, but not good enough to mess with this group right here when they're hitting, everybody's healthy, and Shanahan's got it flowing the way he's flowing. And Brock Purdy was amazing, too. Made a lot of big-time throws.
He really did, to the point where I'm like, okay.
It's more than system. It's system plus.
For sure. That touchdown to, who was it? Was it Ayuk, where he just threaded it in there, and it was kind of on the move?
Oh, like kind of halfway rolled to the right and then set up and throw it to the backside? Right?
One of the best quarterback throws of the year, I think.
Is even shocked that he got it in there. I think I saw the post-game press conference there. But the 49ers are... They're a phenomenal football team, and they certainly are one of the best in football. And Purdy, you know, I got all the faith in Purdy. I know they lost those three games, and he made a few mistakes here and there, but he's making a ton of plays, and watch out. Watch out for the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, Pete says in my ear, he goes, MVP, and I was going to say, because I feel like if you're an Eagles fan, you should be pumping up Brock Purdy, because it's basically the exact same argument against Brock Purdy is that you would make against Jalen Hurts, right? I don't think the argument is made against Jalen Hurts as much as it is made against Brock Purdy. But, I mean, why not? I mean, his numbers are awesome.
No, with the standard way of how we vote on MVP, right? I mean, yeah. I mean, quarterback on one of the better teams, and he's putting up good stats. He certainly deserves to be in the conversation. I don't deny that at all, right? And I think Dak Prescott's probably in that conversation now a little bit, right, to go along with Jalen Hurts. Maybe Mahomes, A.J. Brown's falling off, Tyreek Hill is the guy I still look at to go watch out. I mean, we saw what he could do on Black Friday.
Great transition. The final game that happened, Dolphins beat the Jets 34-13. And kind of like the Cowboys where it's like nothing matters until the playoffs. It's like almost like getting that like that for the Dolphins. Not the playoffs, but nothing matters until they play a team that's good. Because it's like, yeah, we know you can beat the Jets. We know that. And they did. They handled them very well, 34-13, with maybe the craziest play of the year, the pick six Hail Mary. They made it look easy.
Yeah, I mean, they made it look easy in the long run, but it wasn't easy until that play you're talking about.
I'll give you that, yeah.
Until the Jets, you know, did one of the most Jet things I can remember, right?
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So what do they got now? They got the butt fumble on Thanksgiving, and now they got the Hail Mary.
Is that what they're calling it?
On Black Friday? I think the Hail Mary. That's what I'm hearing, all right? Yeah, so that's the word on the streets here in New York. But that was the moment where you're like, oh, gosh, the Jets. Okay, this fucking game's over. See you later.
Yeah.
I mean, painful. I hope all the Jet fans realize it wasn't Zach Wilson that was the problem with your offense. Duh.
Yeah, but he wasn't the answer.
No, either. He's not the answer. But the offense sucks. I mean, there's nothing to look at. And that's, again, you know, we've dissected that enough. The one thing about the Dolphins – right. Running the ball was impressive against the Jets. We know they're dangerous in the pass game. You know, Tua in colder elements threw some balls that sit up in the air for 75 seconds, like the two interceptions at the end of the first half that are a little troubling. And that's what does worry me. But the biggest blow of the day is Jalen Phillips tearing his Achilles.
Yes.
I don't know if I feel like the Dolphins can win the Super Bowl now without Jalen Phillips. That's literally how big of a injury that is. See, he's not a household name yet, but, like, you know, they lost their Myles Garrett. He's the best player on their front seven. And so for them to lose him, and I know he's not Myles Garrett yet, but he's one of the best edge defender pass rushers in football. You know, they'll beat a lot of teams. We know that. But like what you're talking about, the upper echelon, the really good teams, can they beat them without a Jalen Phillips coming off the edge? I don't know if I feel like they can go deep into the playoffs and get to a Super Bowl without him. That is going to be an interesting thing to see how they kind of reallocate their sources in that department.
That does suck. They do have some studs on defense, though.
Yes,
still.
They do. So, I love Javon Holland. That's great to see. I'm loving that everybody's seeing Javon Holland, who I voted for first team All-Pro last year. Everybody is seeing now with the defense that's not so crazy aggressive, and he doesn't have to play man-to-man against a receiver, you know, every third play, because last year they all out blitzed all the time. Now he's getting to play true safety, and he's really a well-rounded, awesome football player.
Do you get that vote again? Are you doing that again?
I think I'm still there. I don't think I ruined it last year. I think I'm still good to go.
Good. I'm glad to hear. We can talk about that as the season goes on. We have one more game this week, Monday Night Football, Bears at Vikings. They told ESPN, they go, we'll give you the Super Bowl rematch, but you also have to take Bears and Vikings.
Hey, I think this is a sneaky good game tomorrow night. One, Justin Fields has been playing really good. The Bears can run the football. The quarterback design run game is going to give Flores and that defense some issues. And as we know, they don't have great corners up there in Minnesota. And the Bears got dangerous receivers, as your Lions team saw 2 weeks ago. They got some guys that can run by you. So I look at that and the way the Bears have been playing defense as of late, you know, I pick them, you know, every week I try to pick like the one or two games where I look like, ooh, this could be the upset. I took the Bears to win 23-20.
Ooh.
I think this game suits them very nice. We'll see where it goes. But, you know, Dobbs and Kevin O'Connell, what they do on that side of the ball always is scary. They always have a good game plan.
After a Lions loss, I would like that result.
I think that would be a good result.
I would take that.
Give you a little separation.
I would take that. All right, we did it again.
We did it. That's right. Week 12 in the books. Chris Sims unbuttoned with my man Ahmed Farid here to lead the charge. He's tired. I'm tired. I can barely say charge. See? Can't even see that, right? It's kind of like Chargers. And they were charging our way out of this podcast because we're chargering.
At the end,
right,
like
we're
at
messing
the end
up.
Of, like at the end of
we're
a game.
We're messing up. It's
at the end of a
go.
Podcast.
Right,
yeah.
I feel like a charger now. That's not good. All right, everybody, you know where to find us. Find us Wednesday for our What the Fuck Happened podcast. We're going to break down all the important stuff that went on today. Subscribe, rate, review. Ahmed Farid, thanks as always. You were the man. You were my buddy. Peace out to everybody out there. Enjoy Monday Night Football. We'll see you Wednesday. Clap it up.
Clap it up.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.